the premiere of the streaming Cyboctacular was a smash hit!
Yeah!
Woo!
Woo!
The reviews are in. The friends of DeSoto. They love this live show.
And this thing is going to be available to stream until midnight on May 30th. That's the rest of the month, so get a ticket and watch it tonight, why don't you?
There's exclusive merch at this show that we didn't have available on tour.
And if you already support us on MaximumFun.org, you'll get a discount for your ticket. Check your email for a promo code.
The ticket link is at greatestgentour.com. Go check out the show, watch it with someone you love, and share your embarrassment with them.
My friends, the great experiment. Discovery.
Hidden. Trick.
Would you look at that?
The greatest trick.
You people, you're all astronauts. Some kind of star.
The greatest trick.
Welcome to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
You were at Coachella over the weekend. I don't want to date the record, but I was very surprised to learn that you had gotten out of town over the weekend. And then I checked my calendar. I was like, isn't that Coachella? What's Ben doing out there?
I was so close to Coachella that I could see lights from Coachella and hear Coachella from where I was.
Wow. So like on the back patio, you were listening to Blur or whatever.
I could hear No Doubt, like rocking the stage from where I was, but
wow.
I did not actually go. We have some friends from a baby class that we took. One of their fathers is a retiree who has retired to one of those houses that's like on a golf course in La Quinta. And
That's the dream.
Yeah.
Except for the 5 months in the middle of the summer when it is a hellish nightmare.
I was actually like, man, like I really got to introduce Adam to my friend, because I feel like proximity to Coachella and proximity to golf would be things that are much more up your alley than up mine.
I would never go to Coachella, just to be clear. But you and I have a friend who I think does fairly often and does music festival shit.
Yeah.
And God, I kind of feel like I aged out of that, especially the camping aspect of it. Like,
yeah,
my birdie could not deal with the trauma of that. I'm sore enough waking up as it is.
I always associated Coachella with camping, but I was in a gated golf course community this weekend and seeing a lot of people who were clearly there for the festivities. So I don't think it has to be the hard scrabble experience that a lot of people make it.
Did you scold everyone you saw wearing a Native American headdress, or did you just let them be free to do what they're doing?
Free.
Like you're just on the porch, just mean mugging them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was kind of what I spent the weekend doing. Just, I stood out on the porch and I actually wore out the muscles that tilt your finger from side to side.
This sounds like a very restorative trip for you.
Yeah,
like your power meters have just filled right back up again, full of apples, whole apples.
Mm-hmm. No, it was fun. It was get the toddlers in the pool weekend. There were a few families from our baby class out there.
Oh wow! So house full of babies and baby parents?
Yeah, we had just like a row of those clamp-on high chairs on the edge of the counter, and we're just,
holy shit,
throwing macaroni at the kids and cut up strawberries, and we had a great time.
Can you turn that into a drinking game? Is that like is that like beer pong? If you can hit Derone in the mouth with a quarter raspberry, the other parents have to drink.
Not far off from the way the festivities proceeded. I was turned onto a new prophylactic drinking intervention this weekend that I need to tell you about. I think it was called Z-Biotic or something like that. And it's a shot. It's like a little glass vial that you knock back, and it's full of, the way it was described to me, some probiotic that makes your gut extra good at processing the thing that makes you feel like shit the next day after drinking. And it seemed to work pretty well because I had run out of Broads and didn't realize it until it was too late to re-up my supply before the trip. And I made it through scot-free despite three of us dudes killing a liter bottle of Costco tequila one of the nights.
You got away with one.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it was a really nice weekend. It was great to get away. It's like, I always feel like a little bit weird about accepting a nice trip out of town like this, because there's I don't have a golf course house to offer anyone in return. Like, hey, well, that was great. When it's ski season, we'll go up and stay in my house that's on a slope. You know, like, I can't reciprocate. So I gotta like send some flowers or something.
I have observed this in my good friend Benjamin R. Harrison. It is a kindness to the giver to accept the gift in good cheer and with great thanks. Ah. And you are someone who appreciates the nice things that are done to them. I would hope that you can move through life more often not feeling like you owe for things like that, you know?
Just feel a tremendous guilt no matter where I go, Adam. And that the only way I can really assuage it is by saying, to people that are wearing culturally appropriative concert wear.
See, every time you do that, another apple goes into your power meter bin. It's that new apple visual display situation. It's just adding apples to your power bar.
Yeah, I basically went Super Saiyan this weekend. I'm fucking ready.
Well, I'm fucking ready to get into episode 5 of this final season of Star Trek Discovery, Ben. What do you say we get into that?
Let's hit it. It's season 5, episode 5, Mirrors.
You know the greatest danger facing us is an irrational fear of the unknown. Unknown.
Unknown. And this one begins with a book's log. In a moment that made me wonder, should I be keeping a journal? Will my life not be important if I have not logged it?
Yeah.
Is this not a log, what we're doing here? This is our log.
This is a log. We just did a captain's log about going to Coachella and not going to Coachella.
I don't need to write any of this down. This is going into the audio record.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's being saved for time immemorial, and it's occasionally attached to satellites going into deep space, learning.
Satellites going into deep space with gold records featuring naked people on the outside.
Hey, you know what would be cool? Gold records of naked us going out into the cosmos. Yeah. Just a very disappointing schematic of two unfortunate male bodies.
Yeah, the Cosmo came calling and we sent nudes.
Book's talking about his mentor and a life of choices that have led him to this moment. Kind of the ramblings of an about-to-die person, if you ask me.
It did really feel like maybe this was going to be Book's last mission based on the tone of this. But it also felt a little Star Wars-y, like he is speculating about if Maul is indeed Cleveland Booker's daughter. Maybe there's some good in her that he can find a way to appeal to. And he might have an opportunity today, so he's looking forward to that.
He's going to wake up and choose mentorship himself, is the idea here. And the suggestion here is not unlike anything we thought in the episodes previous. He wants to save her in addition to or instead of apprehending her.
Right. So we cut to the bridge, which is really just thronged with people. Everybody is there, and Tilly and Stamets are walking to the front to make a big presentation. I guess they aren't doing this in the conference room because there's just like so many fucking people that need to be read in on the plan here.
Kind of seems that way. Is the bridge not the place where you do the presentations and the birthday and retirement gatherings for the ship? It kind of seems like the prime spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially because it's sort of stepped in a way that creates a natural amphitheater effect.
Right. Yeah. It's like when they figured out putting stadium seatings in movie theaters in the late 90s. It's like, oh, why didn't they do this the whole time?
We have so many examples of like the advancements in so many areas, like theater seating.
Mm-hmm.
I still do not understand originalism in any way, shape, or form. Look at what we've done with the movie theaters. You want to go back to whatever it was before?
You're telling me the founding fathers with those crazy fucking wigs piled up on top of their heads couldn't come up with tiered seating to look over the top of those wigs when they were in a play? And those are the people you want to listen to on how we should run things?
How smart could they be? I like my intellectuals with teeth not made out of the seats that they're in. Crazy.
They've gone back to the last known coordinates where Maul and Locke were, and they beep some buttons and kind of reconfigure the way the view screen is representing what space looks like in front of them. And this is, I mean, imagine it being revealed that you were this close to a butthole and you didn't even know it.
This butthole is winking like no other space butthole we've ever seen in yeah. Star Trek. Like, at this point, I feel like we're being made fun of by the effects team on the show.
Yeah, they're like, Ben and Adam will fucking lose their minds when they see this one.
Why does it look more butthole than ever?
Yeah, so this is a dimensional butthole, and it leads to a different dimension, and they can't take the whole ship in there because the hurl is too small. It hasn't gotten itself ready.
Yeah.
And so they're going to take a shuttle, and it's going to be Book and Burnham and no security team because she doesn't want to make Maul and Locke think that they're mad at them, I guess.
Rainer's like, hey, can I have a word? And in the ready room, Rainer's like, I may or may not have a real problem with you being in the A story again. I should be in the A story today.
Right.
And Burnham's like, I understand that. However, tactically, I'm the best.
I've thought of everything already.
If your argument is tactics in any way, I'm the best one for the job. And he's like, all right, well put.
Like, she kind of stands firm and then kind of like does the fist to the side of his shoulder, attaboy vote of confidence. Like, you got this. You got this, Rainer.
Rainer grabs his shoulder like, ah, and then walks out on the bridge. She hit me.
Starfleet HR, the captain hit me.
That doesn't happen. He has his orders. His orders are to command the disco while they go off in the USS amyl nitrate shuttle.
Yeah. Oh, crucially, she also cites some quote from his people's mythology to him. I guess she's been doing a little bit of reading about. She's like, I'm getting ready to go to like a summer festival, and I wanted to do my cultural appropriation well.
Rainer's like, that is for my culture. You do not get to say that.
So. I think we were like speculating at some point that he was human. Somebody actually said that in the press about this show.
Yeah, but he's not.
And he's not. So we got misled there. I think his species appeared in like an episode of Deep Space Nine.
In the shuttle, Book and Burnham head toward the space butthole. And
just to check in, you're still pro Book Burnham?
Absolutely. Every time. Yeah. I get a glow in my eyes just thinking about it. It's important for a captain to know what the other people on the mission will do once they are confronted with the mission itself. In this case, what do you do when we find Locke and Maul? And Book says he's going to try to reach her. And Michael Burnham's like, well, that's cool. I mean, if you're reaching her and putting handcuffs on her at the same time, that'll be great.
Yeah. He doesn't really have a plan. He's just like, he's counting on being able to connect.
Couldn't he connect using, I just touched my temple and made my forehead glow. Like he could do that, right? That's a connection.
It was really cool the way your forehead glowed when you did that.
I know.
How did you do that?
Incredible.
Well, I've taken a lot of mushrooms.
So have I, evidently. That was another fun thing about Coachella weekend was I was looking through the fridge for a snack, and I found a chocolate bar, and I was like, ooh, chocolate bar. And then I read the packaging, and I was like, oh, psychedelic chocolate bar.
Wow. What yeah. a fun Airbnb host that is. That's really knowing your market.
Yeah.
They have to time the entry into this space butthole like the cistern room in The Rock. You remember that scene?
I do.
This thing is opening and closing at an interval, and in that interval, the shuttle has got to go through without being smushed, pinched off, if you will. And it's not a clean hole at all once they're inside. There's debris everywhere.
There's a butt in there, I hope?
It's a mess inside, and they say that it's full of like exotic matter, and there's debris from Mullen Locke's ship, which is sad to me because I liked that ship. I wanted to see more of it. Yeah, and they're also losing communications with the disco as they head deeper inside.
The greatest trick.
One very surprising object they find inside the space butthole is an ISS ship, and it is slowly revealed to be the ISS Enterprise.
Wow.
And after the theme, we learn that this ISS Enterprise is pretty thrashed looking. And it's the Pike era ISS Enterprise. The close up on the name was so close. I was like, is there a chance this is a different era ISS Enterprise?
Yeah.
Like a ISS Enterprise C or something would have been amazing.
That would have been really cool. I also just went to a, oh, final season. Like, are we going to get the guy that's playing Kirk on the new show? And like, are we going to get a cut of the Mirror Universe version of the TOS yeah. cast, but with the people that are playing them on Strange New Worlds?
Some more cross-pollination.
That would have been fun, would've right? Been like, fun, it's yeah. it's the same sets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But no, that's not what happens. So they dock, and we cut back to the disco where Tilly kind of barges into Six Bay and has Sad Culber move his examination to a different bio bed because she needs to reroute EPS so that they can try and get comms back with the shuttle. And despite the fact that she is just, you know, up in her head and obviously super stressed out about her engineering task, notices that he is Sad Culber and says, like, hey, if you need to be in one of those scenes towards the end of every episode of Discovery, yo.
Hit me up. I mean, I will say this, like, the actors on the show are so seasoned at saying they're fine when they're not really fine that this is a great moment.
Speaking of fine but not actually fine, Adira, feeling a ton of time bug guilt. Stamets tries to talk them out of that, but we just kind of fly past that. And then Rayner marches in and wants to know, you know, what they got in terms of reestablishing contact with their away team. And he does not want them to pepper their explanations with technobabble.
It makes some sense if your goal is fast and if the situation is life-threatening, which it appears to be.
Right.
So, like, their embellishments about their list of possible ideas is just unwelcome to Rayner. He's like, just give me the less wordy version of what these ideas are, please. Because also, like, this whole you are not alone energy is not helping us possibly save our captain, all right? You know who is alone? Michael Burnham and Book. I'm pro Book Burnham. And I would like to save them.
And Stamets does like a double take, and then he's like, oh, right. I thought you said something else initially.
Yeah.
The turnabout is not fair play with the touchy-feely hangs, and he kind of kicks them in the pants to get something working, either to spread the hole wider or whatever it's going to take. And meanwhile, we cut over to the ISS entrepreneur.
This place is a tomb.
They haven't found Maul and Locke yet, but Book and Burnham go onto the bridge, and they're assuming that the clue must be hidden here as well, if this is where Maul and Locke went. Although it could, like, this is one of those, like, I guess, but also, like, Maul and Locke had to get off their ship because it broke in half, so...
Yeah, a lot about this scene is a little unclear, and a lot about this scene moves very quickly. I guess the presumption is that the only pieces of debris inside are the broken in half ship and the ISS Enterprise, but I don't know. Like, it seems like the clue could be somewhere else on a different ship or a different piece of debris or something.
This is so they said in the beginning something about this hole, this blinky butthole being a thing that existed because of the burn. So this pocket dimension seems like it wasn't findable at the time 800 years ago when the team of scientists was hiding their clues.
Right.
So I was like, how were they supposed to find this? Like, what are we talking about here?
You need to stop asking those questions. They're just going to make you crazy.
They talk a little bit about Spock, Burnham's brother, and speculate about whether he was cool in the Mirror Universe version or not.
He must have been an absolute badass. Like, we've seen him in TOS. Like, we know he was. But this new Trek version of what he might have been like really makes you think.
Yeah.
He's not there. And so is anyone else. It appears as though the crew has abandoned ship. And that's weird, because for a Terran crew to abandon their ship, it's very unusual. That is not something that they're known for.
So they get internal sensors up, and there's three life signs in Six Bay and two up here on the bridge. So they're getting ready to go down there, and they learn a little bit more about, like, the abandoning ship thing, that this crew was actually, like, escaping the Empire, and they were helped by a Kelpian slave turned rebel leader who, presumably, they, once he helped them get off the ship, they devoured his threat ganglia because so tasty.
So the idea is that this crew was maybe good, or they turned good.
Right.
And inspired by Rebel Saru. Rebel Saru. Not Action Saru in this universe.
They ran from the Terran Empire like a fucking Clydesdale.
With the goal of entering the Prime Universe. Like, this is what they wanted. They wanted to get to the Prime Universe and potentially, like, start a new life or whatever.
Yeah.
This was the goal. And among all of the trash they find strewn about, a bunch of blankets, a lot of personal effects. There's a locket with a picture of Georgiou and Michael Burnham in it. There's also a Gorn's plushie. Because in the Mirror Universe, the Gorns are like little bunnies.
Yeah.
Little sweet little bunny guys.
They're nice.
The kind that you'd make a stuffy out of and give to a little kid.
Yeah. I wonder what the Gorns are up to in the 32nd century.
God, who the hell knows? Thought a lot about that.
Young minds, fresh ideas, be told.
So Burnham puts something off of her comm badge into this locket and pockets it. She pockets the locket, and they go down to Six Bay finally, and they open the door, and it is just full of Mauls and Locks. This is something we've talked about a bunch on our other hit Star Trek podcast, The Greatest Generation, that, like, if you have a security situation where somebody's in a room and you want to get them, you just beam so many security people into the room that nobody can move.
Yeah.
That's almost like what they got going on here with regards to Mauls and Locks in Six Bay.
It reminds me of what's written on so many strip club marquees throughout the country, which is hundreds of Maul and Locks and two real ones.
They realize that the Six Bay holographic emitter is the thing that is making these images. So Michael Burnham and Book do shoulder rolls into the room under fire and take out the emitter to reveal actual Mal and Locke. Like, this is where they like get the standoff where they're like, hey, like, we weren't even really trying to shoot you. We were just shooting that emitter. And they're like, yeah, either that or you suck at shooting, which I really liked.
From behind a medical case book steps, he tells Michael Burnham to cover him. And then he just sort of walks out with his hands in his pockets to negotiate and to disclose his relationship to Maul's father as quickly as possible. Yeah. This is not an impressive fact to her at all, because Maul calls Cleveland Booker garbage. Yeah. And by that, she means Cleveland Booker's mentor.
He was a bad dad, and she doesn't feel like that ingratiates him to her at all. And she has the clue already, so she's ready to get out of here. And this is when Michael Burnham steps out, and she's like, aha, you think you have the clue, but in fact, I have the clue, because everything is a trick. And you know that because of the Romulan poem that you never found the fifth stanza of. I loved the idea of putting some like Prime Universe stuff in it to mm-hmm. make it show on a tricorder as Prime Universe in origin. And I loved that Burnham like anticipated the need to potentially have a counter MacGuffin in a moment like this.
Yeah. Things dissolve into an argument in this scene. And during this argument, it is revealed that Locke is Breen and the subject of a Breen blood bounty. This is a pretty big deal, because once you get one of these on you, there's no way to stop it. It's for life. Because it's such a big deal, they were like, well, if we can just get the progenitor device, that is also a big deal. So maybe we can do an exchange of those two things, get Locke out of trouble, and that'll be that.
I was so excited to finally get to see what a Breen's looks like.
Yeah.
It was great.
And there he sits. We get a flashback here. And we get lots of flashbacks to help tell the backstory of Maul and Locke. The first one starts here, and we know it's a while ago because Long Hair Maul is in this scene. It's on a Breen ship, and she's doing some trading with the Breen, and she is super lippy.
She is.
She does not respect the Breen.
No, she comes with 10 out of 10 attitude, and a Breen is brought over to inspect the dilithium that she's dropping off, because she is suspected of stepping on her dilithium with baby laxative or something. And she has heard a rumor about who this Breen might be, because she's heard that the Breen Primarch's nephew has recently been demoted to doing inspections in the cargo area on this huge Breen ship.
And she is like, how many can there be? She puts all her suspicion eggs into this one Breen basket.
Yeah.
And she clocks him.
The hands reach up and take off the helmet, and it's Kern. There are more inspectors on this deck than you might think. I do not remember precisely how many.
There was not a lot of upward mobility in my first job after being lobotomized.
Sadly, I made a lateral move to the post-burn future, and I'm still doing the same mundane crap.
For a couple of reasons, Maul is working to manipulate Locke here. On the one hand, she wants to be free to do her dirty business there, and a friendly Breen might allow those business transactions to flow more freely. On the other hand, there seems to be a romantic spark here, and maybe one is helping the other out. Maybe the other one is helping the one out. It's kind of a mishmash of feelings and manipulations here at this point.
If you had to say Maul has a type, I think humiliated Nepo baby is it.
Oh, yeah.
So Locke is just catnip to her.
Yeah, she can't resist.
So we cut back to the present, and Six Bay erupts in fire again, and some kind of like automatic shield goes up, trapping Locke and Burnham into Six Bay, and Maul and Book outside of Six Bay.
How badly did you want these to be agonizers that they were stuck in? Where are the agonizers?
The thought crossed my mind that some agony should have been happening somewhere,
right?
On this ship.
Yeah.
Like, amazing that the crew of the ISS Enterprise abandoned ship and nobody was left in agonizers, you know?
You gotta believe not everyone was gonna go along with this plan. I agree.
Yeah, they should have at least found like a corpse in an agonizer at some point. But anyways, Book and Maul team up to go back to the bridge to figure out a way to cut power to these shields. And we get another flashback to a visit that Maul paid to this Breen ship. And she is like flirting with him while he's kind of trying to LARP as being a tough guy. And it's like this like big kind of open work area where people are marching around with guns and stuff. So anytime he's like within earshot, he's like, you know, shoving her up against a crate and roughing her up. But then he's kind of putty in her hands when it's just the two of them.
Yeah, it's very role play-y what's going on here.
Yeah.
And there's a moment in this scene where she wants to see his real face. And he does not want to just take it out in public.
No.
That's actually a little over the line in his mind. But finally, he's coerced into doing this. He takes off his helmet and he looks just like Optimus Prime. But instead of looking like a truck, he kind of looks like a lizard.
Yeah, he's got that see-through head that we saw in the first episode.
Yeah.
And to go into this a little bit more like throughout the episode, but I have so many questions. In the present on the bridge, Book is talking to Maul as they try to hack the mainframe. And he's like, you know, your dad may have abandoned you, but I knew him after that and he was really sad about it. And she's like, not helping. Not helping.
Do you think you kick off a life of crime and excitement and sex with the Breen if you're ready to talk about your dad again? My mind's made up about my bad dad. I'm doing crime and it feels great. Bad strategy, Book.
Yeah, so there's this story about a planet in the G-Quad that she and her mom were supposed to get taken to by her dad. He didn't keep the promise, and so mom had to get a job as a miner, and she died when Maul was very young, so totally understandably, Maul just has an axe to grind about the whole situation.
Up to this point, we've only seen rage out of Maul and the actor who plays her, but I really loved this scene for her because she hangs tear, she lets tear drop. Eve Harlow's got all the gears that we admire in actors on Star Trek.
Yeah.
She does a great job.
And that smoky eye does not run when she drops that tear.
No, neither do Maul and Locke. These colors, this smoky eye, these criminals don't run.
We need to score a lot of laughs fast.
Well, licensed businessman.
We need to talk. It's been a while, right? We should probably catch up. And we can really do that, because when you buy a VIP ticket to the streaming Cyboctacular, we'll get to talk, face to face. Think of it like a Zoom call, except funny. On the show, we tell a lot of funny and embarrassing stories, and this is your chance to share your embarrassing Star Trek story with me and Ben. But maybe you don't have an embarrassing story, and you're so cool. That's fine. We'll still be together, where we can say whatever we want, looking at each other during. Maybe you have a favorite bit you want to come back, or a pet you want to introduce us to. You could be doing this call from a weird shed filled with metal hooks hanging from the ceiling, like we saw that one time. Can you beat the shed with the metal hooks? Let's find out. But it's not a contest. It's just a chill hang with you and me and Ben. And if you want to do it as a group, you can. Get a few FODs together in that shed filled with hooks, and we'll have a great time. At the streaming Cyboctacular, tickets for the show and the meet and greet are now on sale at greatestgentour.com.
Hello, teachers and faculty. This is Janet Varney. I'm here to remind you that listening to my podcast, The JV Club with Janet Varney, is part of the curriculum for the school year. Learning about the teenage years of such guests as Allison Brie, Vicki Peterson, John Hodgman, and so many more is a valuable and enriching experience. One you have no choice but to embrace, because yes, listening is mandatory. The JV Club with Janet Varney is available every Thursday on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. And remember, no running in the halls.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go, try STOPPODCASTI.
Are you trying to put the name of the podcast there?
Yeah, I'm trying to spell it, but it's tricky.
Let me give it a try.
Okay.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go, call STOPPAD. It'll never fit.
No, it will. Let me try. If you need a laugh and you're on the go, try STOPPDCOO. We are so close.
Stop podcasting yourself.
A podcast from MaximumFun.org.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go.
Well, there's a new ship. She's got the right name. She's got the right name. Now, you remember that, you hear?
Back in Six Bay, Burnham is trying to persuade Locke on the idea of them coming in and being taken into custody by the Federation. He is, like, much more malleable to this kind of proposal than Maul would be. And what she's saying is, like, look, you guys did some bad stuff, and we can talk about, like, a reduced sentence if it helps the Federation get their hands on the progenitor tech so that the Breen don't. And he's like, oh, like, what if we got locked up together in, like, a conjugal, like, a perpetual conjugal visit type situation? She's like, I mean, crazier things have happened.
Maybe there's, like, a codependency prison we can go to? Is that a thing?
And Michael Burnham's like, well, you know, having just recently gotten out of a pretty intense relationship, I could tell you codependency is its own prison in a lot of ways.
Back up on the bridge, Book tells Maul that he knows what love is. Does she want him to show her? He had it with Michael Burnham. And he also knows what it's like to have a bad dad.
It's like he's like hacking the mainframe on one keyboard and hacking her heart on the other keyboard.
Can you guess which one drops its security first? Maul isn't trying to hear this.
Yeah.
She wants to get Locke out from behind that shield pronto.
And that reminds her of a different time Locke was behind a shield. With her on that Breen ship, they, like, put up a cloaking field in the cargo bay so that they could suck face together in front of everybody and nobody would notice.
It's like the porn van with the one-way windows. Why is there a Brazzers logo in the bottom right-hand corner of all of these scenes that happen behind this weird shield?
Yeah. Breenbus.com? What does that mean?
She's got some news. She is going to take a job that works in Emerald Chain territory, and that means this thing is going to have to pivot to a long-distance arrangement. And he asks a question that I would have asked in this moment.
What do you need so much latinum for anyway?
Where is the money going?
Yeah.
And her answer did not make sense to me.
There's a colony, a place where I could just wake up every day and peace be done. You know?
What does that mean?
What I just said.
I sort of understood it as she wants to pay for a dreamy life of peace and leisure down the road. Is that it?
Yeah.
Like, she just wants to earn and earn and earn and then retire.
Yeah, she's fixated on that Gamma Quadrant planet that was promised to her and her mom by OG Cleveland Booker.
Oh, who's going to tell her?
Yeah. You know, she heard that there's algae in the water that glows when you swim in it. She just wants to get out of town. Got to do this one last job.
Just then, at a most crucial time, Locke's uncle walks in with a, what is this, a phalanx of shock troops.
Yeah.
Near him. He knows something's off about this van that's parked in the shuttle bay. Like,
yeah.
That doesn't look quite right. Why can't you see through the windows?
And, you know, in flawless breed, he's like, this van is rocking. Let's go or knocking.
Oh, he's pissed. This isn't going to be good.
We cut back to the present where she gets impatient with Book's computer hacking attempts and she triggers a power surge that she says is going to like cut power to the shields. And Book is like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like that could have other knock-on effects on this ancient ass starship. Mm-hmm. She's like, don't care. Gotta do it.
Look, wait, let me just check that. Yeah. Look out!
And boy, did they blow the bridge big in this scene.
Props to the pyro person who set this up. It blows real big.
It's so awesome.
The flames are bright and they shoot long.
Yeah.
Really long.
So long that I was like, I really hope that the actors weren't actually in the room when this happened. It's like extremely dangerous.
Yeah, looks great.
But the bangers are felt all over the ship, including down in Six Bay. And they look out the front view screen and see the shuttle that Michael and Book took to get here, just kind of like floating away from them. And also down in Six Bay, the bangers kind of trigger more fist fighting between Locke and Michael. Like it almost felt like they just like tumbled into each other and were like, ah, punch, 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 punch. We were having a conversation, but now not.
I love a fight scene that involves spilling through a glass wall the way they do. Great moment.
One thing I really liked about this episode is it felt like when Book and Maul were really like conflicting, Michael and Locke would be like building rapport. And then the second like one of them would reverse course, the others would reverse course.
Yeah.
So now like Book is like having a reasonable conversation with Maul where he's like, I understand that like you have a lot of resentment toward your father. Like I really admired him and I kind of consider you to be family. Here's my pistol. And now they're working together.
I mean, for a brief moment, she kind of John Woo's that second pistol.
Yeah.
We both know our guns.
All the ray guns in this episode were so good. Like everybody has like a slightly different design on their guns. And I mean, like Garrett Wong is going to be shelling out to get some of these when they auction them off finally.
He was stating the obvious again.
In Six Bay, they continue to talk fight. And finally, Burnham is able to snatch the clue from Locke. But in the process, Locke is stabbed with his own knife. And that's so embarrassing, right? When Maul walks in, she's super pissed at what's happened. And Michael's like, I didn't do anything. He stabbed himself. Maul's like, you really expect me to believe that?
Hold on, one second. I got to do another flashback.
Is the thing about the Breen that only their head can be both gas and flesh? Like, can the rest of their body not also be gas and thus impervious to a knife wound that we get here? Or when you go solid all the way. And not just parts of you.
Yeah, because like it seems like when they have a helmet on, they are Slimer. And then maybe just exposure to atmosphere makes them not Slimer.
Do we know what they are physically? I guessed gas. You guessed slime. I am not willing to die on Gas Hill. I don't know what they are or what they're made of.
So in this flashback, the Primarch's bad guys are beating Maul up, and the Primarch gives Locke one path to redemption, and it is kill Maul. And a rifle is produced for Locke to use on her, and he takes a different path. He shoots all the guys, and then he does like a non-lethal attack on his uncle. He just shoots him in the shoulder, and he and Mole are going to go adventure together.
Well, when he shoots his uncle, he tells Mole to leave because, you know, with this Araga blood thing on him.
Yeah.
Like, he's the most dangerous guy in the world to be around. He's like, you wouldn't last 2 seconds with me, babe. I'm radioactive right now.
Yeah.
And Mole is like, nah, why don't you come be a raider with me? It'll be awesome. And we can escape these assholes together.
You're gonna love it.
And this is convincing. He decides to join her.
Right.
In real time, Locke seems pretty sure he's gonna die there, but she is, as ever, reassuring and loving of her special guy.
She is so optimistic.
On the bridge, shit with the Enterprise is bad. It's out of control, and it's going toward the space butthole. And on the other side of the hole, on Disco, they're seeing the flashing of a tractor beam, and there seems to be a sort of code to it that Rayner picks up on. And so he changes the plan for Culber and Adira. They need this hole opened up wider. And the code that Rayner interprets makes it clear what they need to do. They go around the bridge for ideas.
A cask of Kelleran citrus mash for whoever lands this. Go.
Could we invert the deflector array and force the aperture open?
What if we discharge the spore reserve? Hit them with a tachy impulse.
Do what you want. Pull the plug.
It felt like Reese came up with the plan, but then everybody gets the reward. Like, I wanted Reese to get his flowers, you know?
Yeah. Fucking Reese got screwed over here. He's like, amyl nitrate torpedoes. We'll make that thing super big.
And Stamets is like,
that could generate the energy we need.
The downside to this plan is that the hole closes forever after 60 seconds. So you get one big sniff and then you're closed for business. So on the ISS Enterprise, they're a minute away from hitting the event horizon here. And, you know, in this last minute, that is a whole lot of time to say some really emotional things to whoever you're with.
Yeah. And that's why Michael Burnham brings up, when she was jumping around in time, how nice it was to see Book's great big sweaty chest muscles after he came back from the gym.
Do you think she was insinuating something more than just the kiss that they had that we saw in that scene?
Oh, that they actually got down?
Yeah.
Because I don't think they had time, really. Like, they were on like a 4 minute countdown.
That's what I thought. And yet, she made it seem as though things were pretty hot and heavy.
The greatest trek
is yet to come.
Nice and fresh.
On Discovery, those poppers get shot at the hole. It does get really big, and Disco tractors the Enterprise through that hole. I lost so much money on this. I thought for sure that they'd get it partially through Beam, Book, and Burnham out, and then the hole would close on the ISS Entrepreneur and it would explode.
Yeah.
But instead, I feel like we're rewarded with a single of this Enterprise in this universe, and it looks great.
The special effects were absolutely gorgeous in this entire sequence. They were so cool looking. And like this screener definitely had some parts that were clearly not finished. There was like a couple of places where the sound mix wasn't done and it was just, you know, like, okay, like they have some temp track in here and like they haven't EQ'd the dialogue perfectly. But this part, I was like, this is motion picture grade, beautiful special effects work that they're doing here.
And it's really great.
Mole and Locke get away in a like medical pod that warps off.
Oh, I heard war pod.
Oh, I thought it had something to do with like keeping Locke on life support while he had the stab wound in him.
Oh, that's going to be important. Yeah, I might have heard it wrong, but I heard Terran war pod as a phrase. And I was like, oh, that's a fun idea. Like even an escape pod on a Terran ship can kick a lot of ass.
One of us definitely misheard something.
Every episode.
System shows it's a Terran warp pod, two life signs, sick bay equipment. It's got to be a life support system.
Small luck.
Right.
Rayner and Burnham kind of spend a little moment patting each other on the back for, you know, understanding the code and remembering how the code goes. And doing a good mission and being so good at being in charge.
Burnham tells Rayner that Detmer and Owo get the reward of flying the ISS Enterprise back to HQ storage. And Rayner's like, so then who is going to fly our ship?
Great question. Not answered in this moment.
Yeah.
Tilly and Culber have their catch up, and he explains that he's still feeling sort of emotionally hung over from the Janal experience and describes this as being kind of alienating, partly because he and Paul are in really different places, W/R/T, the unanswerable questions in life. And he doesn't really know what's going wrong with him, but he feels really out of whack. And Tilly sort of points him in the direction of these being spiritual questions that he might want to be addressing.
Can you imagine season one Tilly being treated as a confidant for some of the heavy questions being asked of her in an episode like this? She's really come a long way.
Yeah, I like the character arc, and I feel like that feels really tied to her making a proactive decision about what kind of career she wants to have, and like feeling self-assured that she is like on the right track now in a way that she didn't before.
Well, if you're going to be an instructor at any level, you're going to get asked a ton of questions. And so like she's demonstrating in scenes like this that she's able to answer them, even when the answers are really difficult to come by.
So we learn a little bit more about the clue. Each clue has a lesson, and the crew of the ISS Entrepreneur came over to the Prime Universe and actually became members of the Federation. And the scientist from the team that worked on the progenitor technology that made this particular clue was one of those scientists and left this clue on the ISS Enterprise as like a lesson in, I guess, like second chances and determining your own destiny and not like letting ill shit from the past be the thing that determines your destiny, I guess.
The goddamn regret.
Do you feel like this is going to be the storyline for the Section 31 movie?
When they talked about the records disappearing after a certain point, that really did feel Section 31-y to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too.
But yeah, like we can shape our own future, and we wave goodbye to the ISS Entrepreneur. And that's our episode. Did you like this one, Adam?
She'll always bring it home.
This is one of those episodes that every season needs where it kind of fills in the spaces between the major plot points. It tells us a little more about the reasons things are happening and not just those actions. But one thing really stood out to me about it, and that was the Culber and Stamets conflict, in that Culber just can't figure out why Stamets isn't on his level about an experience he endured. And also, in a very similar way, how Maul and Cleveland Booker have very different feelings about the same person.
Right.
Her father, his mentor. And it just made me think about how generally two people can have very different relationships with the same person, right? No one ever says that. But I feel like that is a universal truth, you know? Like, and it's okay. It's okay for Culber. But he's really freaked out by this. He's freaked out that Stamets, either because he's being kept from Culber's experience in some way, or maybe in all those times that Culber's tried to tell him, just hasn't been able to like be there for him. That's something that's scary. Scary isn't the feeling for what's happening between Maul and Cleveland Booker, but it's very clearly like they're talking about the same guy, but their relationships are different. And sometimes that's just how it is. It feels like a very different vibe for a Star Trek Discovery that seems super motivated to get everyone on the same level, going in the same direction, thinking very similarly about the quality of the interpersonal relationships on this show. So maybe it could be a thing where down the road it is revealed that, like, maybe this show and its characters aren't as, I don't want to use the word preachy, but like whatever a synonym for that word is, about that quality in people and how we need to feel exactly the same about them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make any sense? So that's just word salad, but that's how I'm thinking about this episode. What about you?
I think that's interesting. I mean, one thing I've been thinking about a lot, I don't know why this made me, what you just said made me think of this, but they are following all these like ancient clues, but they're ancient clues from the perspective of like everybody else. Like from the perspective of the people on Discovery, they're still sort of future people to them that made these clues. So this, like, they're kind of like inoculated from considering this to be the wisdom of the ancients in a way where like, oh, like people from the past like intuited something on a deeper level that we can't possibly understand in our fallen present.
That's really interesting. And maybe the character that's had the closest contact with the opposite would be Culber.
Right.
For his experience with the Trill.
Yeah. And I felt like Culber has seemed a little like out of whack, but it hasn't been completely well defined. And I guess that's like sort of part of the point is that like he doesn't understand how and why he feels out of whack. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's very interesting that like, it isn't just an Indiana Jones experience for them where they're like following ancient clues, because ancient is like a totally relative term and they're even ancienter.
Right. I mean, it's sort of analogous to like when you talk about ancient versus future, science versus faith is another way to consider it.
Right. So, I thought it was a really good episode. I thought all the Breen stuff was really exciting, and
look at how much we learned about the Breen.
Yeah, I thought the costume design on the Breen was great because it kind of it picks up some of the shapes that they had in the uniforms that we saw in Deep Space Nine and stuff. But you know, they just looked like awesome and modern, and it seems like we are bound to learn a lot more about them, and that has been one of the great like, you know, Star Trek species that has been, a lot has been implied about, but very little has actually been shown about. So I'm psyched about that. And I'd say that the one thing that I didn't like was Owo and Detmer sort of seemed like they got written off the show in this episode and they weren't even in it.
There was a beat on that shot where the ISS Enterprise is floating away that felt like 2 seconds too long in a way that kind of suggested goodbye.
Yeah.
And if that's the last we see Owo Detmer or a Dowo, I'm going to be really upset by that. Cut back to that transit from time to time with the remaining episodes. I would love to see like those two on a giant ship alone having the best fucking time.
That should be the next episode.
Yeah. Give us that bottle episode for sure. That'd be killer.
Oh man, like seeing how long each one could last in an agonizer booth. Like, oh, that sucked. Wow.
I'm just sticking my foot in. Let's both stick our feet in.
All right. Adam, do you want to see if there's anything in the priority one inbox?
Oh yeah. Never agony is what the priority one messages are.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, our first priority one message is from Dave, a.k.a. Biz, a.k.a. Biz is taken. And it's to Ben and Adam. Their message goes like this. For my birthday, I boosted my support and got a P1.
Wow.
Because my present is to support another year of great content from you all. Through changing states and jobs, a pandemic, and 2 kids, the pods have been a constant for me the past 6 years. So thank you for something fun and funny to rely on. P.S. Please keep doing Battlestar Galactica, and if not, do a Brenner drop. Well, I mean, what we can promise you is a Brenner drop, Dave.
I'm Chris Brenner. Brenner Information Systems. You know, interface, operations, net access, channel 90.
That Chris Brenner.
And TBD on BSG.
Yeah, I'd say that remains an open conversation. our next message is from Adam, and it's to Ben and Adam, and it goes like this. I cannot believe won't talk about how the TNG episode The Chase was an attempt to retcon an explanation for why every alien species in the galaxy can fuck every other alien species in the galaxy. All because Gene Roddenberry IRL was so horny for space aliens. The entire Saru and Trina marriage is an homage to how two alien species can fuck. Yeah, Adam, you got us there. We almost never talk about what a hornball Gene Roddenberry was on any of our Star Trek podcasts.
I famously, on all of my personal socials, have mute blockers up for any phrase that goes like, I can't believe that you, and all of its various permutations. No such filter exists on the Priority One messages. However, this idea that Saru and Trina represent Gene's dream. This is the least horniness ever, right? Yeah.
This series head faked a trip to Beta Z and then didn't go.
Yeah.
The Beta Zoids famously like go to weddings naked and fuck all the time and eat fuck fruit. And they didn't go there. So I don't know, Adam.
Adam makes me think that is Star Trek Discovery not horny as a Star Trek show, just generally?
I would say it is one of the least horny series in Star Trek.
I agree.
Which is just so sad.
Make Star Trek horny again. That's what I'm in favor of, Ben. If you're in favor of something similar...
Red ball caps coming soon to Punch Up Top Biz.
Write your message in a Jumbotron, and we'll read it on the show. It's at MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It is a great way to support the production of our show.
Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin! Until we know how this all ends, I feel like Locke might be a good choice here. He just got a demotion to the docks. Like, how existential was this for him? He's got attached family members in high up areas in the Imperium. You got to believe that his shitty uncle or whatever isn't the only string puller he's got there. Like, he must be so smitten with Maul and everything they do behind that shield that he's willing to just throw away whatever potential he's got at work to go do whatever they do around the galaxy. I mean, if you throw it all away for love, does that not make you an Edward Larkin?
Mm.
He's going to be mine this episode. What about you?
That's pretty persuasive. I'll join you. I'll join you on the Locke square. He is so like hilariously passive in his relationship. Like, she is the one that puts all of the moves on him, and he's like, "What? I'm not sure if I'm allowed to make out with a girl when I'm at work." It's basically his energy all the way through it.
Their energy together has been consistent throughout.
Yeah,
this seems very realistic and true to their natures.
I like it. I like it a lot. Good to get some backstory on these guys.
Agreed. Yeah.
Looking forward to whatever we find out in the next episode. Do you want to find us a warning blah to fire across the bow of the listeners before we go?
Prepare a buoy and launch it when ready.
Warning buoys.
An emergency buoy.
A warning buoy.
Sure do, Ben. This one was posted onto X, which everyone knows is formerly Twitter. It's from a longtime friend of DeSoto, Cam Latif.
Who we met in London.
It's true. Their message goes like this. One of the best things about new Star Trek Discovery is getting to listen to new Greatest Trek the day after. I'm already smiling and laughing more than I have for a long time. No one takes us down Star Trek memory lane better than Ben and Adam. End of message. Thanks, Cam.
Thank you, Cam.
Cam is such a positive supporter on all of the socials. I really appreciate their efforts in spreading the word.
Yeah. It is really nice of anyone who leaves a nice message on social media about what you like about the show, and helps us get the word out about what we do here. So we really appreciate it. We will be back at you next week with another episode about Star Trek Discovery. But in the meantime, we're going to hit you with some credits. And are these credits going to be read by you, Adam?
Sure are.
Wow!
Get ready to listen to me doing the credits. Greatest Trek is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica. It's produced by Windy Pretty. And this episode was edited by me, Adam Pranica. Next week on Friday, we'll be back with coverage of Season 5, Episode 6 of Star Trek Discovery, and it's called Whistlespeak. Thanks to Adam Ragusea, who composed the theme music for Greatest Trek. You can find his YouTube cooking channel and podcast by searching his name. Thanks to Nick Ditmore, who created our show art. And thanks to Rob Adler and Bill Tilly for tending to all of the official at Greatest Trek social media pages. Find and follow those on whatever social media you enjoy. And use the hashtag Greatest Trek when you post about the show online. This show's very existence is made possible by the support it receives from its audience. And the monthly support we receive covers production costs and keeps the podcast going. Set up a membership now at MaximumFun.org/join. And for just $5, you'll get instant access to a separate bonus feed filled with extra episodes not available anywhere else. You can also support the show for free by leaving a 5-star review or recommending it to someone you know. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Greatest Trek.
Maximum Fun, a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows.
Supported
directly
by you.